Hello, I'm Luke Cardenine, the host of the Golf IQ podcast, and we've got some very exciting news here in Golf Digest land. It's a new newsletter available exclusively to Golf Digest Plus members, and it'll land in your inbox once a week. It's the greatest newsletter in all the land here at Golf Digest, but I admit there is an upstart rival in the ranks, and it goes by the name of the Low Net newsletter with Sam Wyman, who's here right now. Sam, what's the lowdown on your newsletter?
Well, my newsletter, Luke, is the reason that you are competing for second place at best. My newsletter, as you said, is called Low Net. It's geared towards golfers like myself who are very much in the middle of the pack at your course or your club. It's a game I live and breathe, and I'm obsessed with getting better.
No, in all seriousness, it's a great read. It's full of not just really interesting and helpful stuff, but really relatable stuff from the man who probably loves golf the most of anybody here at Golf Digest. So head over to golfdigest.com/plus. Sign up and start enjoying both of these awesome newsletters each and every week.
I shaved it off at the end of that year because I was playing poorly and wanted to change. And then I grew it back and then I shaved it. And I've had multiple iterations of it. Usually it comes on when Katie and I are at odds with each other and I want to make her mad.
Welcome back to The Loop. I'm Steve Hennessy, joined by Alex Myers, getting up early on the West Coast in San Diego to join us today. CP is traveling, so he won't be joining us, but Myers, let's jump into it. We got Peter Malnati. I mean, what a week for him. He starts off the week in the Bahamas in probably one of the bigger meetings of the last 3 or 4 years. He's on the PGA Tour policy board, meets with Tiger, and all the PIF folks. And then he comes to the Valspar and takes it down 350-1. A long shot gets it done. And his second PGA Tour win, hadn't won since the Sanderson Farms in, 2014, I guess. So
yeah, 2015, I think.
2015. Yeah. So, I mean, another long shot, Myers. This is nuts.
It's nuts. I mean, I didn't even, 350-1 is insane. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you see not even once a year.
Correct.
Usually, you know, I mean, like maybe you might see one 200-1 shot. And we've now had multiple, because obviously Nick Dunlap was there and, who else?
Grayson Murray was around.
Grayson was at least that. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, to see multiple examples of that in 1 year is insane. But yeah, the timing's amazing because, like you mentioned, he's on that policy board. Every time he has a good round, he gets just peppered with questions about. We even talked to our guest today, Johnson Wagner, about that, brought that up, about how he is kind of doesn't envy that part of the job, and that a guy like Peter Malnati just gets peppered with questions about Saudi and Liv every time he plays well. But no, amazing timing, because he had gotten a couple of sponsor exemptions recently. There've been some talk that the policy board guys have been unfairly been giving sponsor exemptions in some of these events. And then he goes out and wins. So obviously he kind of justifies that. But I remember, Steve, and I think this might've been before your time on the pod, when he won the Sanderson, we had him on the pod. And I remember talking to him and being like, wow, what a great guy. Because his wife, like my wife, is a psychologist. What I didn't remember is that in 2015, it seems like a different world back then. The fall winners did not get into the Masters
invite. That's right.
Yeah. So this is just amazing. And then they said on the broadcast, not only has he never played in the Masters, he's never even made the FedEx Cup playoffs. I mean, how?
Like, it's been 125 forever.
You know, exactly. Like, it's one thing when it's 75 last year, but I think this is his 10th season. So that's at least 8 times that he just had to get in the top 125. I'm actually stunned, especially because he won once. So good for him. I mean, you could see the emotions. Pretty amazing from him.
He truly is like probably the nicest guy on the PGA Tour. I got to spend time with him after the Sanderson Farms win. I was at Sea Island. We did a What's in My Bag shoot for the magazine. It must have been a few weeks after. And I mean, it's so cool. He like invited me into the player dining after we did our interview. He's like, nice. Man, have you ever been in player dining before? Like, obviously not. I'm 24. I've been working for Golf Digest for like 3 years. why don't you come in and have lunch with me and my wife? I like
Oh,
sat
man.
down, you know, all these players are around us, and he just a genuine person. And that's obviously what's been talked about on golf Twitter after the win, but you know, it's not a show. You know, I think with some of these guys, they, when the cameras are on, you know, they try to, it's a big act. That's not the case with Malnati. He did his 20 minute interview with me for the magazine, and that could have been the end of our interaction, but he went above and beyond. You know, he's talking about how big of a Jaime Diaz fan he was. We talked about Jaime Diaz's writing for a little bit, and we stayed in touch a little bit too on email. So I got to shoot him a note. I don't know if I have my 2015 emails still, but I'm going to look.
Same with me. I know I remember kind of doing the same, and great guy. And obviously just like, you know, we always talk, and it is funny because we joke about this with Johnson Wagner, how all these guys like, you know, kind of look alike or cookie cutter or whatever, but like he is a little different in that, you know, he's got the bucket hat, he's got the yellow ball. Like he hits it, he bunts it around. I mean, like, let's be honest.
Literally.
I mean, it's kind of amazing what he's able to do. So it's when someone like that gets a chance to win, like you have to capitalize, because you just never know when it's going to happen again. And especially when you have that kind of a skill set. I mean, you know, wasn't the greatest leaderboard, but you know, you had Cameron Young. We'll talk about Cameron in a second, but you have a bomber like Cameron Young up there, and you're trying to, you know, outplay him and outmaneuver him. And on that course down the stretch at Copperhead. And I was just so impressed with, obviously the birdie on 17 was insane. I mean, just a stiff a shot there. I mean, that's, you know, the snake pit, it's supposedly one of the toughest three hole stretches on the tour. I mean, is it maybe a little over? And maybe, I mean, the 16th hole is a beast. That's for sure. That's a very intimidating hole. 17, you know, it's an uphill par three, plays a little longer than, I think the yardage was about 200 yesterday. But to hit it to what, 6 feet under that situation is insane.
Crazy.
And then 18, he knew he just needed to not totally gag after Young did. So, but kudos to him down the stretch to hang on. And again, lock up that second win, but first trip to Augusta. Obviously he's going to be in the playoffs now for the first time too. So, good for Peter Malnati. What a win for him.
Good for him is right. I'm pulling up his career stats. I mean, it's kind of crazy. He's been through a lot of lows in his career. He was very open about that, you know, in his post-round stuff. But, you know, this is a guy who's only made like $6 million. And I say only as a big caveat, because, you know, it's a huge, huge amount of money to most of us. But in PGA Tour terms, he's only made about $6 million across like a 10-year career.
Right.
And to your point, hasn't been in the top 125, or has been in the top 125 the last couple of years, but this was after the move, you know, to a shorter 75 person FedEx Cup. So insane stuff from Malnati. I mean, the guy was topping shots on over the weekend, and like, he's just relatable. You know, I'll always remember the video of him. He like, it must've been, what was it? Corn Ferry, like finals or something. And he was in the water, and he like got into the water and like put his feet in and made some spectacle, and then like tries to hit this crazy shot, and the ball just like comes back at his feet. And he says to himself, all that for that. I still say that. It was just like
all that for that. Yeah.
Such a great moment.
You could see exactly. You could see, you know, you mentioned the career earnings. Yeah. Okay. 6 million. That sounds like a lot. And it is a lot. Don't get us wrong, but you take out taxes, you take out travel, you take out all that stuff. Even, you know, suddenly it comes down from 600K a year to, I don't know, 250K a year, 200K a year. That still sounds like a lot. But these guys, you know, like you said, it looks glamorous, but especially when you have a family, when you're traveling 30 or something weeks a year, like it's not like he's just sitting around and collecting that money. Like, he's working his ass off. He's traveling all over. He's spending time away from his family. Like, a lot goes into that. So, yeah, okay, he's had a somewhat maybe comfortable living, but he grinds compared to most of these guys. So you could see that. And so, again, like, to win $1.5 million in one day, So it was the 6 million, not counting that, I assume, but like you win a quarter of your career earnings on one day. I mean, that's amazing. So again, bucket hat off to him. As a fellow bucket hat guy,
tip my
bucket hat to him. Not today, but yeah, you know what I mean.
The yellow golf ball, a bucket hat. I mean, you know, if he walked up and you got paired with him at your local course, you'd be like, all right, I'm probably going to beat this guy today. And
you really would think it was just like a normal dude you're getting paired with.
Till you see a short game, and he's always been a great putter. So anyway, congrats to
Let's talk about his drop, Steve. That's a lot has been made. And look, he right away, the rules official comes over and he goes, I think this is like an amazing break, but I want you to see it. Like he even knew. And the rules are there to like, you know, help you in certain situations. Mm-hmm. But what did you think about it? It was pretty fortunate.
Oh, very fortunate. I mean, that was a really awful lie that he had. And, you know, to get to move it, the thing that we always say, like in a scramble, like you can't move it from, you know, if you're in the rough, you can't move it to the fringe. And, you know, he's able to get a better lie out of it. But he did it to the letter of the law, I guess. Like, and he brought in the rules official, admitted that he's getting a lucky break, and he sure did. So, you know, I don't know if he did anything wrong, right?
No, of course not. It's just like you said, it's one of those things. And a couple of people said that, like, I don't understand how the rule isn't, you get a drop because you're standing on the sprinkler head, but you have to keep it in the same, on the same playing surface. Like, like you said, with the scramble, it's like what, 6 inches or a foot area.
Whatever.
Keep it in the same area, same, you know, if you're in the fairway, you're in the fairway. If you're in the rough, you're in the rough. If you're in a bunker, you're in a bunker. To me, it's just so crazy that this rule lets you move it a club length and then all of a sudden you're putting versus hacking out of like thick rough.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it could have happened to everybody, you know, totally within the rules, but I just think the rule itself is just bizarre. Like it doesn't make any sense. It's like you hit a shot in the rough, you obviously would not have been putting. And then next thing you know, you see a guy being able to putt.
Yeah. It's the sort of ruling that, like, if we were playing and you said, oh, I think I could drop here and be putting.
You'd say, no way.
No chance.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be like, no, there's no way that's ruled. You'd say, no, like, that can't be right. And then you'd be like, yeah, you're probably right. It's not.
Just dropping in the rough. I'm just going to be safe. But
so
he gets to.
Me is what's crazy. Now, he still made, you know, he still had to two putt it from 50 feet. But certainly that did help him.
Yeah.
Very
fortunate.
Very fortunate. Unfortunate for Cam Young.
Yeah. Speaking of unfortunate, was Cam Young, his seventh runner up finish in his third PGA Tour season. This is the most runner up finishes of anyone in the last 40 years without a victory. I mean, let alone someone who's just been on tour for 3 years. So Cam Young has been the definition of unfortunate. You know, if you want to call it that, there's been tournaments where he's possibly been unclutch. You know, maybe that was the case at the Valspar. I mean, some of his runner-ups were world-class, like at the Open Championship, a runner-up to Cam Smith. You know, you can't fault him there. He was right there at the PGA, I think, at Southern Hills.
Yes.
So, you know, it hasn't all been unclutch, but this time and other times when he's not even finished runner up, and we've bet on him because we've bet on him quite a bit, Myers, you know, it has appeared to be unclutch. What do you make of Mr. CY coming up empty handed again in the trophy category?
Yeah, it's tough because, like you said, these are like he's had a lot of big time runner-ups or where he's in contention at majors and this and that. And I guess I'm not surprised that it was a record, or at least in the last 40 years, but it's hard to, and I was just doing this thing last week based on Xander. I mean, we're killing Xander for all the runner-ups. Again, Xander has 7 wins with those 13 runner-ups. Cam Young would now have to win, you know, he already has 7 runner-ups and no wins. So I'm talking about runner-up ratios. he's at 0-7 or 7-0 in terms of runner-ups to wins, winning 0% of the time he finishes in the top two. That's, I mean, it's almost statistically impossible, obviously, if it's a record. So something is off. Now, does he ever shoot a 80 on the final day and blow it? No, he doesn't. I mean, he kind of hangs in there and he just makes the one bad. I think it's Southern Hills. It was whatever that really beastly hole was, par 4, 15 or something. Yeah. I remember he hit a good drive and he was right in the middle of the fairway and he put it in a back bunker and he hit a bad bunker shot and he three putted and all of a sudden it's a double and he was dead. And it was just one hole. And other than that, he played great. The Open you mentioned, if people recall, he drove. Now, he was kind of desperate. He was kind of – but he was playing with Smith. He drove the final green and made the putt for eagle.
Yeah,
so he like, gave himself a chance, but then Smith, you know, made the birdie. So, he like you said, Steve, it's crazy that there's so many runner-ups without actual chokes. Now, you could say this was a choke because clearly the 18th hole was a choke. Mm-hmm. Not only the tee shot, he hits it off the planet, but then he gets a good break where he has a shot. He hits an amazing recovery shot, and then – I like an amateur level three putt almost, yes, right? Like yeah. He comes up 10 feet short with the putt. Like, yeah. So he kind of choked twice on the same hole. That, so to me, that's what's alarming. But overall, you know, you got to think, it's funny. I have one buddy who a few weeks ago said, what do you think the over under is on, you know, I'm setting the over under at 6.5 wins for his career. You take over under. And I said 100% under because I pointed to Bill Haas, another Wake guy who had all the talent. He won 6 times on tour. Ricky Fowler has won 6 times on tour. That's a lot of wins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing against Cam Young, but something's off here, Steve. It's he you know, he lost to Rory over in where was it, Dubai this year.
That's too. Right.
That doesn't even count towards his PGA Tour runner up. So
good point.
But it's funny, you mentioned us betting on him. We've bet on him so much. And what a hell of a show this would have been for the Met, because we have Johnson Wagner and it would have been Johnson Wagner celebrating Cam Young. It would have been just a Met special.
Yeah.
It would have been unfortunate that our boy CP isn't around for that. But no, we've bet him so many times. And finally, what was it? 3 weeks ago, I told you guys, I said he contended. Was it Phoenix?
Yeah, he was in the mix in Phoenix. I bet
on it. Mix at Phoenix. I had
and missed, you know, it was, this is what happens with him. It's like a 4-footer for birdie, and this was on Saturday at Phoenix, and like didn't even hit the hole. And then you didn't hear from him the rest of the weekend. It's just what happens with him.
I got to go back to it wasn't the Palmer
Bay Hill.
Oh no, it was Cognizant Classic, and he was in the mix again, and he finished 4 back of Ekrot. But it was like you said, he just did. He was right there going into the final round, and he did nothing. And this is after same thing with Phoenix and same thing with whatever. And I told you guys, I said, that's it. I'm done. Not happening again. CP kept betting him at least one other week, maybe two. And so then, of course, I figured he was going to win yesterday just because it was 3 weeks after I gave up on him.
Yep.
So I'm actually stunned he didn't. I was just basically like, I can't, unbelievable. I'm going to miss out on this win.
I said the same thing to my buddies. I can't believe I'm missing out on Cam Young's first win. But
he
got beat by Peter Malnati, which is
right. Like that's crazy. The thing. It's like, it's so tough. He's had, like you said, these class runner-ups at the Open and at the majors, at PGA Championship. And now you find yourself with the lead or tied for the lead with Peter Malnati, and you have Chandler Phillips, like
Phillips.
And you can't get it done. Like that, what a golden opportunity that was for Cam.
It really was. Yeah. I mean, you're right. Some of the runner-ups were like, you know, he was way back, like the Genesis. I'm looking at his list of runner-ups here. And
right.
The Genesis, when Joaquin Niemann won, he was like 7 back, like whatever.
Right. Like, I don't know how many times he's ever even had the 54-hole lead.
Good call. Maybe once or twice.
Yeah, like it's not like he's just coming out there and just totally gagging it, but it's like what we talk about with Rory. There's just one round or something, and a lot of times it's on Saturday, honestly, where he's in the mix and then he just doesn't do anything, puts himself too far behind the eight ball. Even when he has a good Sunday, it's just kind of too little, too late. This was a little different. He was in it the whole time. He's got disappointed. And then the quote after, though, I got to find it. I mean, the quote after
I have it here.
Kids is unreal. Like, because we all know, Steve, we know this. Someone said, talk about your emotions right now. He goes, I don't know. Honestly, I realized I wasn't going to win pretty quickly. I have a 4-hour drive home with a 1- and 2-year-old. So whatever emotions are attached to that.
That's amazing. A lot of emotions attached to that. We can attest.
It's a brutal drive. Let me tell you.
That's a 4-hour drive. And this is like at night, right? He's getting on the road at like 7:30.
Yeah.
You know, you have a 1- and 2-year-old who are past their bedtime.
Hopefully they slept for him. Hopefully. Because that, to imagine having to, you know, you're gutted after just not winning. Again, he walks away with 900K or whatever. Yeah. But
I mean, he's made a great living.
These guys want to win. These guys want to win, of course.
Yes.
And then you pile in the car and you got to deal with that.
That's brutal. Insult to injury. I mean, we saw what family meant for Malnati being there. I feel like, you know, it has to help a little for Cam Young to have, you know, his young family there with him. But, you know, on hour 3 of that drive back to Jupiter, that might be tough. I'm with you.
Yeah. And we knew he was a young dad, but I'm amazed. I didn't know he had 2 kids.
I didn't know he had 2 either.
26. Yeah.
And he's only 26. So,
26. I mean,
and we're kind of shitting on him, but he is 26. And like, he's going to get it done. Obviously, like you said, the over under on his tour wins, like a good number is probably 4.5, and he might very well get to 5.
He when I said the 6.5 thing, like if you tell me he's going to get to 10, of course it wouldn't surprise me.
Correct.
Like you said, he's 26. Look, who are we just talking about? I mean, Wyndham Clark is going to be making a Masters debut at 30.
Right.
He didn't win. He didn't have a win till he was 29.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, and now look at him. He's like, we talk about him like he's the next Brooks Koepka maybe. So like, you know, Cam Young still got plenty of time.
Yeah.
But obviously he's got to be a little disappointed.
And his game it's built for majors. So like, there's a reason why he's contended. It comes down to the short game and the putting, particularly in the clutch. So he'll figure it out. You know, he's a very talented player, you know, has access to all the best instruction in the world. Obviously his dad grew up, David Young was the longtime pro at Sleepy Hollow. So, he's going to figure it out. So
yeah, he did not grow up on the mean streets of the Bronx. We all know that.
Not the mean streets of the Bronx.
Went to Fordham Prep, which is in the Bronx. And that is I covered them. They had some good golf teams, but he grew up basically at Sleepy Hollow and with his dad as the pro. He'll be okay.
Yeah,
he'll be okay.
He will. well, speaking of Westchester golf, Johnson Wagner was our guest on the podcast. And I mean, what a great couple of weeks for him. You know, we've really enjoyed him being on Golf Channel the last couple of years. I think he's brought a really fresh approach, whether it's in studio or, you know, some of the live stuff that he's doing. He just brings, you know, more of a youthful player and, you know, some sharp analysis as well. Just, you know, contending in tournaments. It was just a couple of years ago. He had, you know, top fives in PGA Tour events. And so to have him on after this player's fantastic little segment that he talks about how, you know, the origin of it, did it on live from every night, and we could expect to see it at all the majors this year, which is pretty cool. So we got a chance to talk to Jay Wags, who is a Golf Digest legend because our boss, Sam Wyman, covered him when Sammy was at the Westchester paper where you also worked, Myers. And Jay Wags is going to Q school. And as Jay Wags said, he was like, Sam was always there. These were the old school newspaper days, like the Westchester paper sending Sammy out to the West Coast just to cover Johnson Wagner at Q school. Like, kind
of
crazy.
Glory days of like, we'll send someone down to Q school to cover. Right. Like, you can't even imagine. Now they don't even have a guy covering the Knicks, you know, or the it's unbelievable. We used to have a beat writer for every sport, including like local golf, which was basically Johnson Wagner at one point too. And now it's like, there's nothing. I mean, it's really sad. It's just like most newspapers. And this was a pretty big paper too. We're not talking about some freaky big paper. I think it was like 150K circulation.
Yeah.
So But I do remember those days and Johnson, and obviously like Andrew Svoboda was coming around a
Sure.
little after that, and you had like Andrew Giuliani, and
Oh,
every once in a
man,
while you had like a
legend.
really, and then of course the younger guys, my guy Mike Miller, our guy,
Yes.
Mike Miller and Quagliano, Michael Quagliano. So there's some these
You
great
lost me
talent
at
coming
Michael
up,
Quagliano.
but no one got to the level of Johnson Wagner. I mean, again, we're not kit to win, and we talk about it, to win all those events in a row, these majors, these Met majors, is truly stunning. And Steve, to your point about him on TV, NBC, I know it's not going to happen, and they have this revolving door thing now, and they're giving guys tryouts, and this week it was Noda Begay, and they've done with Kisner and McGinley and who else, Luke
Luke
Donald.
Donald, yeah.
Johnson Wagner would be amazing.
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
He would be awesome. Again, and he does, because he does great at what he does. But I think he would be amazing on the broadcast. I'm not sure. I mean, if that's what he wants or whatever, but like, I'm just throwing it out there. He would be awesome. I feel like they're trying to find like a somewhat bigger name, and they think Kisner is maybe that, but I don't know. I just feel like Johnson Wagner would do a hell of a job.
He
So we had a
would.
great time chatting with him for
We
sure.
did. Yeah. And speaking of Kisner, he talks about what it's like for Kiz to go from, being in
Yeah.
the booth to then competing at Valspar like he did this week. So anyway, check out our chat with Johnson Wagner.
All right, we are excited to welcome to the Loop three-time PGA Tour winner and now a NBC Sports star. I mean, especially after the Players Championship. Johnson Wagner. Johnson, thank you for joining us today.
An absolute pleasure. I'm honored to be here with you guys.
I mean, look, first of all, by the way, I have my MGA hat here. You're in good hands. We are all Met people. Our third co-host, who's on a bachelor party trip, of course, because he goes on one every week, Chris Powers. He worked at the MGA, so he knows you as well. I think he might have seen you last week at TPC Sawgrass also. But I'll start by asking a question that he wanted us to pass along, which is, who's having a better season, Scottie Scheffler? Or run Scottie Scheffler from last year into this year, or Johnson Wagner from 2001 to 2002 in the Met section?
Wow. Well, definitely Scottie Scheffler. The earnings he's had and the amount of wins and the quality of wins were great, but that was without a doubt the best golf I've ever played in my life. I mean, I remember trying to qualify for the Met-Am in 01. The only reason I decided to play was because it was at Hudson National, which was where I grew up caddying, and qualified at Osiris Country Club up in Orange County, which is where I kind of grew up with as a junior member. And so I won the qualifying at Osiris, went to the Met-Am, and ended up winning that, and then went on this run of MGA majors, so to speak, that I mean, I don't know. I wish I could recapture the amount of confidence I had playing in those tournaments. It was a blast, and fell in love with the MGA and the way they ran tournaments.
No, I mean, for people who aren't aware, I mean, we're not kidding. This is a historic run in this area. The Met section is an incredible section. I mean, some of these events used to be actual tour events. I mean, we're talking, 50, 60 years ago. But, like you said, you won the Met Am, then the Met Open, and then in 2002, you won. There's three majors: the Met Am, the Met Open, and the Ike Championship. Then you won all three in 2002, the last of which was the Met Open at Wingfoot. No one's ever done this, ever won three in 1 year or won five in a row, obviously. So, I mean, how was it really the best golf of your life back in? I mean, even though you were only, like you said, 17 or 18,
No, I was 21,
or
22.
21, 22. Okay,
I was good. My junior, it was the summer after my junior year of
that makes sense.
college was when I first started doing it. And
Gotcha.
then I turned pro for that Met Open at Wingfoot. And the only reason I played it was because I had missed qualifying for the US Amateur. I was going to remain amateur, finish my degree in the fall, help assistant coach. And I actually hit a wrong ball in the US Am qualifying. Only you only hit one wrong ball in your career. And I ended up having to play off and was first alternate. Had to play off for the first alternate spot, which I was, didn't get in. So I decided to turn pro and not go back to school. And it worked out well. I
Worked
made enough
out.
money to pay for Q school, bought a new car, and
Nice.
never looked back.
Wow.
Nice.
Where
That's
was
awesome.
the USAM that year?
I have no recollection. 02, I don't know where. Oakland Hills, maybe. I don't remember where it would have been.
Yeah. Okay, that's a wild story. Well, they truly dub it the Wagner Slam. So we're not just blowing smoke up Johnson's ass. This is a huge deal to anyone who pays attention to amateur golf. So we could go full into Met Golf for this whole podcast, Johnson. We'll transition to last week at the Players. I mean, speaking of a rise in stardom, you were truly the talk of golf social media last week with everything at the Players. So just take us through what that was like. Was that sort of your idea to come up with that stuff? Was it the producers? How did that all come together?
Well, my first time on LiveFrom was the U.S. Open last year at LACC, and Matt Hegarty, who's the main executive producer of the studio side of Golf Channel, and Alan Robison, they wanted me out on the course at LACC doing walk and talks, trying to get players, maybe doing some features on some holes. And I was there just Tuesday and Wednesday, and it went really well. And so in the off season, they basically said they wanted me at all the majors and the Players trying to do the walk and talks. And about 2 weeks before the Players Championship, Alan Robison called me and said, "Hey, we've got this idea. We've got an approval. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're going to be on the course doing walk and talks. And then Thursday through Sunday, we want you on the night show going out and trying to recreate shots or situations that people find themselves in." Right. And I mean, I just fell in love with the idea. Thursday, I had my whole family down there. It was spring break. So I was doing the morning live from show and then hanging around watching golf. I had my son with me, who's a good golfer. He's 14, right, about to be 15. So we would go out on the course. I had a cart. We'd sit and watch golf and just hang out.
That's great.
And on Thursday, I went back into the trailer at about 4 o'clock just to check in with the producers. And Jeff Fabian, who's like the main producer on site for the night live from, he said, "I want you to go out and check out that drop on 7 that Rory took and, you know, see what you can do with it." So we had to wait for play to come through, and I was out there and I had two camera guys with me, and I called the producer Jeff and said, "Hey, I think if we can, I know exactly where the camera was that picked up the bounce." Right. I said, "If we can set up one of our cameras there, have one on me, I can try to throw balls and see if we can recreate how Rory's ball bounced and determine exactly where it hit." And he loved it. I went to the range and grabbed a bag of range balls. He's like, "Don't throw your balls into the water. Go grab a bag of range." we were out there, did a couple rehearsals. It looked really good. And by the time they came to us, we were set and ready to rock. And once I rewatched that one for the first time, I mean, how ridiculous I looked from the far, the far camera, throwing the ball as hard as I could. But, you know, I figured, you know, Rory's driver, the ball's coming in fast. So, I mean, I was truly just trying to recreate the bounce and didn't realize how ridiculous and how funny and how it would come across.
I mean, that was like a 90 mile an hour heater, you know.
Yeah, right, you were tossing it. What's your baseball background?
I played a lot of baseball. Played all the way through. I played high school baseball in eighth grade when I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and then we moved to New York my freshman year, and golf and baseball were the same season. So I had to give it up in ninth grade.
Okay, but obviously you have some kind of art. So, I mean, and Brandel was joking, you're going to have to ice the arm down. What, were you feeling sore the next day?
I mean, I don't know if y'all have ever thrown a golf ball that hard, and I had probably 6 or 7 warm-up throws. My son Graham was out there with me, and I knew I was going to need to loosen up, so we did a little long toss to try to warm it up. My arm was fine. It definitely was sore. I don't know if anybody's ever toilet papered a house before, but if you're trying to throw toilet paper rolls high up into a tree, I've always said it's kind of like throwing air, and throwing a golf ball is very similar. There was definitely some soreness, but everything was okay.
Gotcha. You mentioned moving to New York. So I worked at the Journal News, and every time you did something, we had to say Garrison's own Johnson Wagner. That was the big thing. And then our boss now, who I worked with at the time, is Sam Wyman. He was kind of your like beat reporter. He went to Q school. I don't know if you remember that. He went to like Q school with you a couple times.
Did you forget?
He was always there.
Yeah, exactly. So you do remember Sam. Yeah. Tell us about, I mean, I know you were originally from Texas, but you moved to upstate New York. I don't like what people call it upstate New York, because it's really not upstate New York, but you're kind of like 20 minutes from where I live. I'm in Armonk right now. What was that like moving there and kind of moving to a place where maybe, you know, there aren't as many PGA Tour pros that come from this area. What was that kind of like?
It was definitely interesting. I grew up in Texas and dad changed careers kind of at 38 years old, went back to school and got his PhD at Vandy. So we spent a bunch of years in Nashville, great junior golf program. Right. And I remember he got a job teaching at West Point Military Academy. And so we were moving to New York and I was freaking out like what, clueless 14-year-old. I had no idea what New York golf was about. And I said, are there even going to be golf courses? Is the whole thing going to be concrete? And we moved to Garrison and we lived on a dirt road. I mean, it was as rural and as beautiful as it gets. And I had no clue that the MGA and the metropolitan area had, you know, it's the greatest collection of golf courses. Right. In the entire world. I quickly found that out when we moved up there and started playing MGA junior stuff. And it was awesome. Took a little while in school, being a, you know, sort of a country Texas, Tennessee kid with an accent. I think it took me a while to make some friends, but the golf was my outlet. And I just absolutely loved growing up there. I don't think my career would have ever gone the same had we not moved up to New York.
Right. Do you have a Mount Rushmore of favorite courses in New York? And, you know, I feel like Long Island is sort of its own beast as someone who grew up in Westchester. So maybe just like the Westchester golf, what are maybe your top four?
It would be Wingfoot, Quaker.
Yep.
I love Hudson National. I mean, I caddied out there for four summers. I absolutely love Hudson National. And I don't usually say that about Tom Fazio golf courses. Yeah. I think that was probably his best work. Wingfoot, Quaker, Hudson. I mean, gosh, my coach Bobby Hines was at Old Oaks forever. I love Old Oaks.
Is great.
Century. I mean, it just, you could throw a dart at a map of Westchester County and land on a top 100 course. And like Metropolis, Fenway, and the work that I've seen at Fenway, the redesign, I can't wait to go back and play it.
I mean,
it's just ridiculous. And there's a few that I haven't played that I want to. There's an old Seth Rainer real close to Old Oaks that I'm dying to go play. I'm blanking on the name right now.
Yeah. The really private one.
Purchase is new. Blind Brook. Yes. Okay. Blind Brook. Thank you. Yeah. I'm dying to go play Blind Brook. And I get up there a bunch now, doing studio work in Stamford, Connecticut for the Golf Channel. So, this summer I'll be traveling with my clubs and trying to go play a few that I haven't played, Stanwich over in Greenwich. Yeah, I mean, I could talk forever.
You got to do Waikigil too. If you haven't played that in a while, it's fantastic.
Did they redo Waikigil? Because we used to play
it like late 2000s, 2010. Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw did it. Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah,
it's really hard to pick just four. You're right, but I think Steve and I always toss in Sleepy Hollow. I'm sure.
Oh my gosh, how did I leave Sleepy Hollow? Exactly. Hollow's
like my favorite anywhere.
Yeah. Sleepy Hollow's. Yeah, that's top of the list. Yeah.
What was it like being, you know, a caddy? What did you say, 3 or 4 years at Hudson National? What would you have any memories of that? I mean, and did that help your career in any way, would you say?
I think it helped shape my personality a little bit. I've always felt like 80% of the world, no matter what class you're in, 80% of the world are really good people and 20% are jerks. And I felt like I learned that there.
Yeah.
Most of the time was great experiences. People really cared about who I was and then there was the 20% that just treated me awfully, like I was just some, you know, caddy. And so I think I learned a lot about society, caddy in there, and just people in general, and you learned when to be quiet, when to speak. And it was a good experience. I don't know if it helped my golf game that much, but I lost. It's a hilly place.
Yeah.
And we used to wear full jumpsuits. I lost 30 pounds my first summer caddying going out of college. And it was feeling like a stud my freshman year of college.
That is a very tough walk. It's a
very tough walk. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. They just redid it too over the fall. So,
well, they have that new practice facility, right, Steve, or something like that
too.
It's like a big building over there. It's really
just completely regrassed it and rebunkered it. So that, you know, it's going to be interesting.
Stevie got us out a few summers ago. It was the first time I've been there. And I remember I pulled in and I parked in between a Ferrari and a Lamborghini. So that's the kind of place we're talking about here.
Yeah. Lots of fancy cars. And that range is spectacular. They have a full TrackMan setup. So you just log into TrackMan and you can track all your stuff. It's special.
Place is unreal. Well, going back to these live from hits, you know, at Augusta, can we expect you to expect to see you out at Amen Corner, you know, chucking balls?
I really, really hoping that would be the case, but I think we're gonna have to wait until the PGA. Golf Channel sending the clips, hopefully to the PGA, to the RNA and USGA, and I think we feel really confident with the U.S. Open and Open Championship to be able to do very similar things. We're still waiting to hear back from the PGA, and I have very little hope of Augusta, but one shot that I would love to recreate at Augusta is if somebody rinses it on 12 and they go up and drop it in no man's land out there.
Of course. Right? Yeah.
And it's all mown back in. And I've played that hole super conservatively both years I played. So I've never had to hit that shot, but I think trying to hit that shot into 12 from 80 yards off of into the grain fairway grass would be wildly entertaining.
Under the lights too, that'd be incredible.
We
got to make that happen at some point.
I'm guessing they say no, but you never know. I mean, they let Dude Perfect out there a couple years ago. I mean, they're kind of opening up a little. You mentioned the Masters, obviously played twice there. Where does that kind of stack up for you in terms of, I mean, you know, you're a three-time PGA Tour winner, so you have and obviously all the Met accolades we've talked about, but where does just being able to say that you play, you know, because a lot of good players never even get to Augusta, where does that rank in terms of just being able to say, put that on your resume that you played there a couple times?
It's really high up, and I think the Masters is my favorite golf tournament in the world. My favorite individual tournament that I played was probably the 2013 Open Championship, just because the weather was incredible. I played well. But the Masters is just on a different level. And I had never been as a spectator until 22. And I took my son on Saturday and we had a blast, and seeing it through his eyes and just the wonder, not being able to have a cell phone out there, and just the quality time that he and I got to spend together. It's special. And last year I shadowed for radio, first time being able to see the press building. And I'm just, you know, blown away by the infrastructure that's built around that golf course. And seeing it from, you know, my son's perspective, and then seeing it from a media perspective, it just highlights that it is bar none the greatest golf tournament in the world.
Yeah. Right. It's so special.
You mentioned 2013 Open. Was that at Muirfield?
Muirfield. Yep.
Phil Mickelson. I was there. It was crazy. The locals were like, this is the hottest weather we've ever had. It was probably like 79 degrees, and they thought it was like a heat wave. It was insane. No, but it was beautiful weather. Cause I remember we had a rental house and I would walk. It was like a mile walk every day, and I would walk to the course, and it was spectacular. Where did you stay that week? That is a really cool place, Muirfield.
We rented a house kind of down near North Berwick, and I had my parents, my wife, my brother, I had my whole family. Caddy and his brother stayed. We actually had a chef for a couple nights at the house.
Oh, nice.
No air conditioning. So
yeah, no, exactly. It was
actually quite tough to sleep because it didn't cool down until late.
Right.
But it was just the memories, the memories from that week. My brother and I went over early and played St. Andrews before, played North Berwick, played Golan. Nice. And then he and my caddy would go out every evening and go play at Renaissance or North Berwick or wherever they could close by. So just so many good memories from that week.
That's amazing. You mentioned just walking through the press building at Augusta last year. You know, what's it like to be a member of the media now? You know, are you getting some cold shoulders from players you used to you know, be buddies with? You know, now you're walking past them with a credential on.
Not necessarily cold shoulders. Most everybody's been cool, and I still consider myself a player. I have a hard time saying I'm a member of the media. I still wear my player badge. I have my media credential inside my yardage book every week that I'm out, but I don't pull that one out very often. The one time that I was treated like a member of the media, it was U.S. Open on Monday. I got there last year, Monday afternoon. I was going out looking at the course, trying to talk to some guys, see if they'd do walk and talks with me. And at that point, I was really hoping to have guys sort of illustrate shots around the greens or putts, or kind of have like sort of a sort of a teaching element to it with these guys. And I ran into Victor Hovland. He had just won at Memorial, and I wanted him, his short game had really just turned around, and I wanted him to sort of illustrate the short game to me, what he'd been working on. He's like, no, I'm not into that. I don't really like doing stuff with media. And I looked at him and I said, media? I said, Victor, I played with you in Corn Ferry Tour Finals. Like we're, you know, I'm a player.
Right.
And his caddy, Shay Knight, who used to caddy at Quail Hollow in Charlotte where I played, and I've known Shay since I was 23 years old. Shay said, you're media when you're wearing a shirt that says NBC Sports. So that was the...
Wow.
That was the one time that I felt cold shouldered, but no, everybody's generally been cool and very willing to talk to me. Yeah.
What is that like? I mean, and obviously, I mean, Kevin Kisner is kind of maybe going down the same path now. I know he's still trying to play every once in a while, but he's struggling. You have, I don't think you've played right in a couple of years now.
Yeah, I haven't played since Bermuda in the fall of 22, and I did Golf Central the week after for Houston. I've not played since I started.
Have you just said that's it? I'm going this route. He's kind of in this like going back and forth zone. What was that transition like for you? Was it difficult? Was it tough to kind of give up on the playing a little?
It was. I had a couple knee issues. I had surgery on my right knee back in the late summer of 22. So my golf game never really came back.
I got you.
So it's been pretty easy, but I've been traveling so much. It's really hard to practice. I'm home for 3 weeks now and I'm looking forward to playing and practicing a little bit, but what Kevin's trying to do, work in the Players Championship Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then going to Valspar.
Right.
You really have no time to hit balls or prepare at all. So I think it's really hard to do both. And I kind of made the commitment. I signed a new 2-year deal starting the beginning of this year. So I've got a pretty full schedule this year, next year. And I love golf, and if the opportunity presented itself to play the Champions Tour in 6 years,
I
would be happy to do it. But for now, I'm having so much fun, and I know that, you know, I'm hitting it far for me, and I'd still be bottom 10% on the PGA Tour distance wise. And it's just too important to hit the ball a long way that I don't want to go play a tournament thinking making the cut and finishing 30th would be a good week. That is not what interests me.
Right.
So not a desire, like with the Houston Open coming up, like, you know, at least for a few years, that's not something you want to entertain.
That tournament is so special to me.
Yeah.
I think if the Houston Golf Association was still running it, I would really want to play and reach out. But now that the Astros Foundation, Jim Crane, they're running it, I don't think they care too much about me. So I don't think there's a chance at a sponsor exemption there. Okay.
You mentioned a knee surgery. I just had a right knee surgery and you're scaring me. What did you have done? If you don't mind me asking, did you have?
Yeah, I had torn a meniscus. They just
me went
and, yeah, oh, scoped no. it and repaired it. No, and it's not the right knee. I injured my left knee too. And that's okay. When my right knee gave out. I'm not going to go into the details of how I injured my left knee. It's
okay.
A little embarrassing. And okay. it's my left knee that is causing me not to be able to post up
okay.
the way I want. It's but yeah, it's an embarrassing injury.
Okay, well, mine. I was trying to do the stack swing speed thing, and I've done it for a couple months, and it was finally the last swing of a session. So I was warmed up, and I went back, and I just popped my right meniscus. So, but okay, so it's the left knee. I'm worried about coming back as well, and you know, getting back to you know my.
You'll be fine. You're not going out there trying to compete with Scottie Scheffler.
No, I'm not. No, that I'm trying to beat this guy though, who's a sneaky 11 handicap or whatever his name should be. You know, John, it's crazy when you go back and you think about your three wins when you won in 2012. And I know it must cross some people's mind. Did it ever cross your mind that like that might be the last win, or did you think I'm going to keep on racking them up here?
I thought I was going to keep on racking them up. Yeah. I was in a really good spot with my game, finished second the next week at the Amex. And
wow.
I was, you know, number one on the list for a long
FedEx?
On the FedEx Cup for a long time
nice.
That season. I had a couple chances to win after that, finished second at Greenbrier the next year. And a couple other second place finishes. No, I never would have thought that would have been my last win on the PGA Tour. I mean, I was on cloud nine, and Yeah, it's kind of weird looking back on it that it's been 12 years since I won. And yeah, it was it's a little bit sad to me, but at the same time, when you win and you think golf gets easy, that's when maybe you don't work quite as hard. Plus, we had young kids, and it just kind of, you know, my window went away quickly. I wish I could go back and keep up the work ethic I had leading in.
I mean, you were runner up in 2019 at an event. I'm forgetting which one, but
Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So, oh wow. Oh wow. I mean, okay. My bad. Yeah, that's recent. I mean, that's pretty recent.
So,
well, similarly, you know, obviously another 3-time winner, Anthony Kim, and he's had a 12-year layoff. Is it even reasonable to think that he could get back to even close to the level that he was at? Or is it just too far removed?
I think it's too far removed. And when Anthony came out, what made him so good? We were rookies together in 07, and I played a lot of golf with him. He was so much longer, had an incredible short game. He had like all these tools. And now if rookie 2007 Anthony Kim came out and played against the rookies today, Anthony doesn't stack up. I mean, they're all now Anthony Kim level.
Right.
And I just think it's been too much time. I mean, to me, it's a sideshow. I love the questioning of to Jay at the players in his press conference. Someone said, did you give any thought to, you know, having Anthony Kim back on the PGA Tour? And Jay was like, well, if he wanted to come back and play the PGA Tour, he's a past champion. He could be in that category. He could go back to Q School or the Korn Ferry Tour and earn his card back. But he chose not to take that route because it's hard. It's not easy to get on the PGA Tour. And I love the conversation that, oh, we're just going to welcome all these guys from LIV back to the PGA Tour. No, you're not. There's a bunch of guys that, and a good friend of mine, Harold Varner, never won on the PGA Tour. This is now his third season playing away from the PGA Tour. He has no status. Even if we're like, yes, everybody that's got status can come back. You're really only talking about 5 guys. So for a guy like Harold, he'd have to go back to Q School and get his starts either that way or through the Korn Ferry. And it's the narrative of just allowing guys to come back to play is really funny. Cameron Tringali is another one. Brendan Steele, like Hudson Swafford. Yeah, there's some of them that'll be in the past champion category. And by the way, good luck playing out of that. That's pretty tough to get 7 starts and be sharp.
Right.
Yeah. Are you almost, I mean, obviously the purses have gone up these last couple of years, but are you almost glad that you haven't been involved in it? You don't have to deal with kind of what's
all
been
the
going
changes.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just sad for the state of things in general. The PGA Tour has been so good. And I think Lucas Glover has been really outspoken in the way he's talked. Like, what was so bad with the PGA Tour that we needed to change our business model completely? I think we're letting a few top players drive the narrative a little bit too much. And, you know, they're deciding, oh, wait, we love the idea of playing for $20 million a week with no cuts. And I just don't think it's a sustainable business model. Right. Yes, I'm especially glad that I'm not sitting on the board of the PGA Tour right now. Cause I was on it during COVID and it was challenging and lots of questions. And now I look at a guy like Peter Malnati, who played great yesterday at Valspar and had some flashes at the players. Like anytime he plays well, he gets an interview and people just want to ask him about what's going on with the PGA Tour. How was the meeting with Yasser in the Bahamas? Right. And it's a really tough spot for those guys to be in.
Right.
Yeah, it's tiring. Well, you've been very generous with your time, Johnson. The last one for me, got to ask about the stash. I mean, it's so iconic. Where did it come from? You know, when did you decide like, this is my look, I'm just going to rock this?
It was Thanksgiving 2011. I didn't shave. We were with my wife, Katie's family up in Richmond, Virginia. Came home. I had like 2 weeks worth of growth and I have no facial hair, so I couldn't really grow a beard. So I shaved it all off and just left this just awful stash, 2-week-old mustache. And she hated it so much that I really kind of got a kick out of it. And so I left it. And then I went to the Sony Open in Kapalua that year in 12 and ended up playing really – I played great at Kapalua, finished 9th or 8th, won Sony, 2nd at Amex, and I came home and she's like, damn, well, now you're never going to shave. And I shaved it off at the end of that year because I was playing poorly and wanted to change, and then I grew it back and then I shaved it, and I've had multiple iterations of it. Usually it comes on when Katie and I are at odds with each other and I want to make her mad. But this latest one, when Golf Channel called, my buddy, Kevin Ryan, who I played high school golf against, he's from Orange County, New York as well. He's been a researcher at Golf Channel forever, for 10, 12 years. He called me right after the President's Cup, fall of 22. And I was really struggling. Didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. Knew I needed a job. I couldn't just play five events a year and feel fulfilled. And so he called and said, "Hey, Golf Channel wants you to come do a Golf Central trial week. Are you interested?" And I said, "Absolutely, I'm interested." Came home, told Katie, and she said, "Well, you've got a month until you're going up there. You have to grow your mustache back."
That's amazing.
And so I grew it back, and now I'm afraid if I shaved it, then Golf Channel may fire me. But it's been a good brand for me. I mean, I think most golfers are, you know, white males, and anything you can do, we all look the same, and anything you can do to separate yourself from the crowd is good. Right. And it certainly has kind of given me that.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's so she brand. Actually encouraged you to do it, to
your wife's stand out now. In the that's crowd. Great.
Very smart. Well done, Katie. All right. Well, Johnson, we will let you go. We really appreciate the time. Hey, if you come back to the, you know, Stanford area, hopefully this summer, maybe we tee it up. What's it called? I want to say to everybody, please check out Live From. We always love Live From, no matter what. But now that Johnson is out on the course doing his thing, what a show.
You never know what's going to happen.
It's going to be a fun year. I'm looking forward to getting in some awkward spots and making a fool of myself. I'm not scared to look like an idiot. So that's what I have going for me.
Love it.
Fingers crossed Augusta National comes around. We're not going to hold our breath, but we'll see. Anyway, Johnson, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the year. I'm sure we'll see you down the line at some majors, and we appreciate your time. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Thanks to Jay Wags for joining us. That was one of our favorite interviews, I think, Myers, of the year. Jay Wags is the man. So kudos to him for spending some time with us. All right. Let's talk a little Houston Open, I guess. I mean, we have Scottie Scheffler, you know, he's back competing, and 3-1 are the outright odds on Scottie Scheffler to win. Which probably shouldn't be a surprise, because at this point he's 5-1 to win the Masters. So we're truly approaching Tiger Woods territory. I mean, Tiger versus the field bets used to be like -110, and you know, we're almost here. And it's not the worst field. Like, listen to the top of the board. It's Wyndham Clark is 14-1. Willie Z, 18-1. That moved this morning. I wanted a bet. Willie Z, I still probably will. Tony Finau, 18-1. Sahith Theegala, 20. Jason Day, 25. I mean, there's some players here. And Scottie Scheffler is 3-1. I mean, it's nuts. And he's played here before, so he also has some course history too.
I'm in California, so I know I can't bet.
That's right.
I need Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, whatever it is, to bet.
So, oh my God.
It was crazy watching the NCAA tournament yesterday, not being able to.
You couldn't bet anything.
Something. Damn. I did make a few before I got on the plane, at least. So that was fun. Smart. Watching some of those games. But anyway, I was just struggling to even get the odds up here. DraftKings was making me go through extra hoops here. But I see it now. 3-1, like you said, Wyndham 14, Willie Z 18. Wow. And then, it's not a great field. You know, it's interesting, Steve, right? Because this used to be, for a bunch of years, right, the week before the Masters.
Right.
And you did have guys, I don't want to tease it, but we are our guest for one of the next weeks, maybe possibly next week. He will be playing next week, the week before the Masters, for the first time. Mm-hmm. And that used to be the Houston Open. They would, you know, you would look at the course on TV and they would kind of make it almost look like Augusta.
Exactly. They shaved off like everything around the greens. Right. They really try to emulate some of the shots to attract the players wanted to prep for Augusta.
Right. Exactly. And they did. And they did attract some decent players. I think they even like laid down pine straw, or whatever. At least it looked like it.
Phil always went. Yeah.
Right. But this is definitely different. I mean, next week's going to be Valero instead. Right. So, little different. That's actually usually a pretty tough test.
TPC,
which is not, you know, not Augusta's got its own challenges, but you can score at Augusta, whereas, you know, Valero, it's not quite that. But anyway, interesting that this moved. I don't know. You know, to me, a name that jumps out right away is just Tom Hoagie. Because we've been talking about him recently. He's been playing pretty well. He's also right on the border, I saw, of qualifying for the Masters. You need to get in the top 50, I believe, after next week. It might be this week. It might be either. I should know that. I apologize.
Yeah, we both should. I feel like it's probably this week.
Yeah,
you
know, because
if you win next week, you get in.
Exactly. I think you're right. So he's in that, like, I think he's like 57 or something. And you know, he's one of those guys, the last guys I think that could get in. So I kind of like him. Obviously, he's got the motivation there. And we brought him up when we had Keith Stewart on ahead of the Players.
Yeah.
And Hoagie did play well at the Players. He's had a pretty solid year. He just
probably one of his best years consistency-wise.
Right. Consistency-wise. He just hasn't had like a monster finish, I guess. But anyway, I'm kind of liking him. I'm kind of liking Jake Knapp, you know, against a field like this, falling down to 50-1. You know, we saw him pop and kind of get a lot of respect. Now he's kind of down a little. I don't know. Those are the two names that kind of jump out at me right away.
Did he play last week, Jake Knapp? I'm looked that up. And by the
I
way,
remember him.
We were correct. It's the top 50 in the world as of the week prior to the Masters. So,
and then right. So you have to win to get in that last week. If
correct.
You're not in.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah. No, Jake Knapp did not play this past week. He was T45 at the Players.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, because he was on a stretch of playing like every week when he won in Mexico, like he kept playing cognizant and playing well. So, and this is a Bombers type of course that we've seen in the past. Finau, I think, is won here or played well. So Knapp's a good shout.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that's a great point, Steve. You know, here's this guy. Not that, you know, he's kind of a quote late bloomer too, right? He's like 29 or whatever, but like he finally gets on tour. He's so super excited. It's got to be tough. You want to play every week and you're playing well. And you're right. He finally takes a week off. He probably needed a week off. I like that play. Now I'm talking myself out. Not that I could bet it. I mean, I'm in California. what are they doing out here? Like, what are they doing?
I mean, it's buddy, crazy.
I'm out in this college text chain, and two of my buddies are in Texas. They don't have it in Texas.
Well, Texas should come on soon. I believe.
What is going on in these places?
I know. Florida, it's just recently live. Not everywhere, just the Hard Rock.
Crazy.
California's nuts. And that leads to Ohtani's interpreter getting to, like, you know, go through some shady locals to place his bets. Like, if,
because there's different spots where you can do it.
No, I'm sure it was just like a bookie that he used, you know.
Oh, right. But I mean, are there different, someone said that there might be certain like regions in California that you.
Yeah, maybe the like the Native American.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it's like that. Right. You go to the casino. Yeah.
But anyway, I think you could gamble there, but I'm not sure you could bet on sports. You know, like Nevada is close. Obviously, everyone goes there to place their bets, and that's why it's not legal in California yet, because, you know, all the lobbying efforts from the Nevada politicians. But we digress. This is not a political podcast. So Knapp at 50, I like that. I mean, Sahith kind of stuck out, but
yeah,
I don't know if I want to bet 20-1 Sahith, but this is kind of course he could play well. He's got the power. You know, you can miss a little bit here. The rough, if I'm remembering, tends to be pretty thick. But
well, if they're still setting it up like Augusta, then you can
This is the Memorial Park Muni.
Right. It's not
the old the shell, of course. The Houston
Redstone or something.
Golf Club of Houston, Redstone, whatever. Been called a few things. So
fair enough.
I think Tagala's short game should work here to his favor. So that stuck out. And then Sam Ryder was someone who Keith Stewart mentioned last week, and had a good start to the week, and then kind of had a tough weekend, lost the top 20 for me. But this is the kind of course I think should suit his ball striking game. So kind of like that. I'll have to listen later in the week, see if we come up with any more picks with any more conviction. So,
well, let me just say too, I it's probably best that I'm in California, because I really should stop with the golf. I just can't hit anything. And to
350-1 winners. Like, what are you doing?
Okay, yes, and that's true. But here's the latest example. I made one bet, and it was Brian Harman. And everybody loved Brian Harman, including Keith Stewart, everybody. He doesn't even sniff the cut. Like, you're right, Steve, a 350-1 ended up winning, so I wouldn't have won anyway or whatever. But like, what if I bet him top 20? You got to feel like you're pretty good. He didn't even come close. Like, it just like, even the weeks, I can't, I'm not even, it's bad. So this is good. I'm off this week. I will not, Jake Knapp will win now probably, but I will not be getting any of that action. It's probably for the best.
Stay out in California or move to a state where it's not legal. It might be better for the Myers family, the bankroll. exactly. Well, how about March Madness? Any bets for the Sweet 16 that you got, or how'd you do last week?
It was a really wild week, and it's one of those things where like I had a couple. I know the NC State thing was brutal. Oh,
what a lucky push for us!
Lucky. But I also did have a couple lucky wins, so it probably evened out. I'm about even, actually a little up, so I can't complain too much. The only thing I was gonna complain to you specifically about was that we were all feeling so good about Kentucky last week. And so I did, I made three future bets. I have UConn to win Final Four because people were just saying it's a lock. And
yeah, that was like what, plus 100, something like that?
Yeah, it was only like a big plus 105, but whatever.
Now Auburn's out, so that's an easier path.
Right. So,
that was the four in UNC's region. Yeah, they played on Thursday.
As our boy Dan Rappaport found out last night with his Northwestern teams, they are a wagon coming through and just smoking teams right now. So I feel good about that. But the other two where I did Kentucky Final Four, which was 7-1, and I did Kentucky Championship, which was 30-1.
And wow, they were up to 30 because they were like 20-1 during the conference tournament.
30-1. I was like, damn. And as we know, Steve, I mean, just another horrific lost by your Wildcats.
It sure was. I mean, as I said on the show last week, this is a team that could either win it all or they could lose the first round. Yeah. That's exactly what they did. That's sort of Jekyll and Hyde they've been. I mean, just an absolute disgrace. And, you know, I'm not going to go on a huge John Calipari rant, but there's actual real talks that he might be out at Kentucky. And I've been saying it, as you know, you've heard it for the last 10 years that the guy, his in-game coaching is laughable. Like, I truly believe if one of us were coaching this team, we would have got them to the Sweet 16. I truly believe that. And that's like such a statement that one of the best coaches of college basketball history, supposedly one of the best coaches, we would be better. I think that might be true. I mean, his lineup management is laughable. I mean, the guy is just pouting on the sideline when guys miss shots and things don't go his way. What kind of a leader is that? It's pathetic.
How about after the game?
Yeah.
Crying about that Oakland has, you know, 24-year-olds on the team. Okay, well then don't recruit one and done.
Like, correct.
You have all the NBA guys. There'd be no point to even play the games if they couldn't have seniors, older players. Right. A 24-year-old, it does make a big difference versus an 18-year-old. But like,
I get
that
it.
Dude, Jack Golke, he played Division II for like 5 years. He was
and you scrum. Let that guy beat you. Like,
yeah, I mean, like
adjust. That's what he cannot do. You can't adjust. I mean, this guy isn't missing from the three-point line, and he's just wide open the entire second half, too, and I get it. And, hey, listen, he in his starting lineup, he had Antonio Reeves, who's, you know, fifth-year senior, and he had the big guy from Pittsburgh who came back.
Oh, so they even had some age.
He was a graduate guy. It's not as if this is a lineup of all 18-year-olds. It wasn't.
Right. So he has no excuse to hear him like whine about that was embarrassing.
I know. And listen, like Dillingham and Reed Shepard had awful games.
They had bad games.
Awful games. Dillingham has
Shepard,
been.
It was like Shepard wasn't even playing. He finally hit that one shot. Like
that's all he had. He had 3 points and he might have had four turnovers.
Yeah, that's brutal. And these are like potential top five picks in the draft. Like, oof, yikes.
I know.
So again, that's not all. It's not all on Calipari for sure, but
it's not. There is however, like when your guy is having a bad game, like you got to coach him up. I don't know. Maybe that was happening and we just didn't see it. But anyway, so yeah, it was a disappointing Thursday night for me. I turned off my phone because I knew I was going to get bombarded with.
Yeah, sex. That's the worst. That's the worst when you know you're going to take the shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I've been rooting for Kentucky basketball since I was 6 years old in 1996 when they won it all. So yeah, it was tough. However, then Friday, I jumped aboard the JMU bandwagon, went to the Barclays Center, watched them take down Wisconsin.
That was awesome.
I was rooting against Duke, against Vermont. So obviously, JMU died a pretty rough death. At the hands of
that was
Duke.
Shocking. That was shocking.
Yeah, because that line kept moving toward JMU. You know, people were hard on JMU.
You know what? So when I tested yesterday to make sure I couldn't bet, that was the game I tried, and I tried to bet JMU, and it said, "Oh, you were in a restricted area," and I was like, "Son of a!" And then I turned it on, and they were down 30, and I was like,
"Ooh, California saved you some money again."
Exactly. So I'm already like out ahead. I'm kind of I was shocked though because they were just they could have beaten Wisconsin by 30. I mean they looked 100%. So good in that game and Wisconsin looked so bad and Duke we know is not that impressive. So I'm just surprised that Duke beat anybody by that much. I'm kind of rooting for I always make fun of them because one of my college buddies like grew up and just huge Purdue fan. And I always crush them as being the biggest gaggers ever and they are but. Maybe they're finally over the hump. I mean, they won by 40 yesterday.
Yeah.
They do have the most dominant player in the game and certainly left in the tournament in Edie. So, that's going to be a great matchup with Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of rooting for Purdue to get it done. I was kind of rooting for Houston last night too. I just feel like I don't want, I know we live near UConn. I kind of root for UConn every once in a while, but like, geez, they've won a lot. Like, I'd like to see someone new win, whether it's Houston or Purdue or someone like that. But UConn's going to be tough to beat, that's for sure.
Yeah, they are. I think if it's a Purdue UConn final and you get Edie against UConn's big man, I'm forgetting his name, not Caravan, Klingon versus Edie, that would be sick. And then Edie against Houston. Houston's D. Obviously, Texas A&M put up a bunch of points on them, but A&M has been that kind of team this year. I watched a couple of their games before the tournament. They beat Kentucky twice. So I actually had A&M over Houston in my bracket. Almost came true.
Wow. That was a miracle comeback. I mean, all time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the three at the buzzer to send it to overtime. I was ready to go to bed, and then all of a sudden,
same thing. I'm out here in California. I was like, I'm going to go to bed at 8 tonight because all the kids have been waking up in the middle of the night. And I was like, let me just go to bed. And then they hit, I was like, okay, this game's over. They hit the three to go up 13. And I'm like, all right, I'll watch like one more possession. And like Houston, like kept hit. I mean, Texas A&M kept hitting shots. I was like, they're going to make me stay up. And then overtime. Oh my God.
I know.
That was wild.
It was sick. But Walker Taylor's a lot of fun. So it was fun to watch him ignite that comeback. He was one of our big bets. My buddy Matt and I went to the Barclays on Friday.
Oh, nice.
Whenever we're together for March Madness, like we're just a brain trust. We grew up playing basketball together and we just like, we're seeing the board. We won about $500 each. It was
nice. Sick.
We didn't lose many bets. We had Filipowski over rebounds against Vermont. We're like, I mean,
dude, small all he dude did from was Vermont. Rebound that game.
Yeah, he had 11 boards. Like,
he had no points. 15
minutes left in the game. Yeah, he only had three
That's
points.
Crazy.
Walker Taylor over.
Very sharp.
He had 15 points in the first half. Over under was 17.5. Easy cash. Duke. We pounded Duke every which way against Vermont. So, and JMU, of course.
Sharp.
So,
it's very sharp.
So, hopefully, we'll get the winners back for the Sweet 16. Some very early looks for me. The Purdue line is on the move. I looked last night. It was 4.5. You know, Gonzaga has been very impressive, but that Kansas team is not impressive. So I think, you know, that win, you know, don't look too much into that. And Purdue, I think, is really firing on all cylinders. These guards, whereas last year they couldn't really hit open shots, this is a different team. They have a ton more confidence. So, you know, now it's -5. It's on the move. It's juiced to -5.2. So jump on that. I think the Tennessee Creighton game is wild. That's a huge game. That might be the game of the weekend besides Duke and Houston. So that's Friday night. Those Friday night games are sick.
I'll be back for that. So
there you go. Be able to lose some more money on it.
I wonder at what point on the flight, if I'm like, because I have Wi-Fi, obviously. And by the way, that was great. Shout out to JetBlue. Like, being on JetBlue for the turn, like, I was watching all the games, and that's my sick. Daughter like wasn't watching, so I had two different screens going. It was unbelievable.
Ideal.
But I wonder at what point, like, if I cross over a state that's legal, can I do it?
I don't know if the friendly airwaves, you know, if that counts toward being in a state.
We'll see. I'll test it.
Test it out. That's awesome. Well, I'll let you get back to family vacation. What a grinder getting on the pod while I was out in San Diego. So thanks to Johnson Wagner for joining us. Ton of fun with him. Thanks to Greg Gottfried, as always, our producer. Thanks to Myers for jumping on. And thank you for listening. Check back next week. We got a good run of a couple guests coming up here into the Masters. And make sure you like, subscribe, all that good stuff for the pod helps us. And see how much money Myers loses when he's back in a legal betting state. Peace. Woo. Sweet. Yeah, thanks for logging on.
Yeah, of course. It was fun.
Enjoy the rest of the family.
Legoland, baby. Big day.
Oh, yes.
And then SeaWorld on Wednesday.
Nice. So,
yeah, big few days.
Big couple days.